it's a wonderful thing to be in classical music, because it is timeless, it is endless, and with each visit to a great piece of music, you hear something that you didn't hear before, and it's a very strange phenomenon. But I have remembered always that from the time I was 5 years old and announced to my parents that I was going to be a concert pianist, I never lost sight of that. And so I knew, basically, from a very small child, that there was a foreverness, and that when you said you were going to be a concert pianist, that meant you were a musician, that music was your vocation. It was not necessarily, although it could be, your livelihood. And I knew that I loved it so much that it would be forever, all my life. And there are times that you take a repose. There are times that you're on the stage. And I'm the kind of person that never needed the stage as my being, or my reason for being. And I'm grateful for that, because my world was a little bit larger than the piano. Basically, my favorite instrument is the voice, the human voice. And from the human voice, I think every instrumentalist derives instruction for breathing, for phrasing, and for projecting a melodic line. So, yes, I will be playing more, but I have I'm being able to be free to enjoy my friends and colleagues in their performances, as well as being able to go to opera performances. Opera is my favorite form of music.
You've recorded a great deal of repertoire, but have you been exploring new things that you might potentially present at concert? People might not expect it.
I always go through the repertoire, and I'm looking at things to see what I want to perform. The way I judge a piece that I want to take into my house, I find it a very serious consideration, because when you learn a piece of music, you take it into your inner home, and it is to be there forever. So I look at a piece of music and say, is that piece for me? Can I say something that is useful or interesting about that piece? Because I think that a performer's obligation is to feel that you belong to the piece, not that the piece belongs to you, but you belong to that piece of music. And I have tried always to choose the things that I will play in public by that standard, so that everything is very personal. But then in art, when we first see something or hear something that is of a classic nature, we perceive it first emotionally, then intellectually, not the other way around. So that if the emotion and the intelligence balance, I think that is a masterpiece.
You were the first classical musician whose name I can recall in my life, because suddenly, when I was a child, I remember Van Fiver was suddenly everywhere. His name was on everyone's lips. It was in the papers and everything.
Well, I was very grateful for that period. I've often said that if you have a gift for doing something, that is from God. But if you have a career, that's a gift of the public. So I was always grateful for that.
If we can go back and talk about maybe that period when you won the Tchaikovsky competition. Preparing for that, what was that experience like in terms of when you went to Moscow? You might have had a certain perception of it because of the historical period and the things that had gone on and the ideas of communism and the, sort of the Cold War thing. What kind of things do you recall before you went to on tour, or before you went to the competition, rather? And then once you arrived there, what did you find that was different?
Well, I think probably I never looked at today's world as it is. I always live in the past. So I was thinking about the glories of all the Russias, as there was the title, and realizing that the great wealth of musicians and art to be found in Russia was from another period, and I was not seeing things in today's present terms. So I was enjoying the historical fact. Also, I was enjoying the warmth and the hospitality of Russian people, which has never changed through centuries. And their great devotion and love to beauty and to classical music. I've been back 7 times. The last time was in 1989. That was such a wonderful visit. I enjoyed that.
How do you feel now, in retrospect, looking back at competitions? Do you think they're really a measure of talent?
No. What I've always said about competitions, it is really a festival of young musicians. And more than that, it is an opportunity cycle. It is a door to realize some opportunities, that's all.
Some do and some don't.
And I think that that really is, in effect, what most, for want of a better word, competitions are. They are opportunity cycles, and they present concerts and exposure on the stages of the world.
And you have your own competitions.
Yes, that was something that I had nothing to do with. It was presented. The idea was conceived by Dr. Earl Allison, and along with $10,000 and an announcement that he wanted to have an international piano competition started and named for Rildeby O'Brien Cliburn's little boy Van. So I was very thrilled over that. I was excited, but I just didn't know how it was going to take root and materialize. But in 1961, all of the corporation papers were signed and the Van Cliburn Foundation was born. And in 1962, the first quadrennial piano competition took place in Fort Worth, Texas. So we, last year in 1993, concluded our 9th quadrennial competition. The Fort Worth Van Cliburn competition is only 4 years younger than the Tchaikovsky, because in 1958 was the first Tchaikovsky competition. It's been a wonderful experience to see how many young people will come to Fort Worth, but they will also go to Brussels for the Queen Elizabeth competition. She was a lady, by the way, I revered so much and was so privileged to have gotten to be with on 3 or 4 occasions. She was one of the most magnificent ladies I've ever met.
As I recall, you did make one recorded foray into conducting.
Yes. I did 27 concerts as a conductor. I studied with Bruno Walter and really never thought of going into conducting, and it was really by accident because I was invited to do the memorial gesture in 1961 for the memorial concert of Dimitri Mitropoulos, with whom I had made my New York Philharmonic debut in 1954. And they wanted me to play and conduct the 3rd Prokofiev concerto, which he had done so many times during his long career. And after that, I had invitations. First invitation after that was from the Philadelphia Orchestra for their pension concert. And then it went on and on. And so I did about 27 concerts. And we have, rather, RCA, BMG, has secured, after the Soviet Union dissolved, they secured the master tape of a concert I did in 1965 with the Moscow Philharmonic, and I conducted the whole concert. We did the Colas Brignon overture of Kabalevsky and the symphonic dances of Rachmaninoff, which was the last piece he wrote, and he dedicated to Eugene Normandy and the Philadelphia Orchestra. And then I played conducted the 3rd Prokofiev.
You ever experimented playing other types of keyboard instruments?
Well, I had played the organ when I was younger. I substituted as an organist at Calvary Baptist Church and also a Lutheran church in East Texas. And they were temporarily without an organist. But I would not call myself an organist.
never had much of a desire to play chamber music.
Oh, yes. And I love chamber music. It's very close to my heart. As a matter of fact, I was the one who suggested and wanted very much that they have chamber music as a part of the competition. And we were the first competition in the world to include that, and now every competition in the world includes that. When I think back over my career and the immortal conductors that I have been able to work with, you know, they were each like kings in their own kingdom. And we're talking about such great names as Fritz Reiner and the Chicago Symphony, Eugene Ormandy and the Philadelphia Orchestra, Eric Leinsdorf, the Boston Symphony, Charles Mensch before him in the Boston Symphony, and Kirill Kondrashin of the Moscow Philharmonic. Those are incredible people, and I am so grateful that I had the privilege of getting to know them.
I've always loved your performance of the Barber Piano Sonata.
I love that work very much. I think it's one of the great, if not the greatest, piano sonata from the American composers. It has such strength, such contrasts, and pianistic qualities, because Mr. Barber was a wonderful pianist. He was a pupil of Isabella Vengerova at the Curtis Institute, and he knows the piano very well, and he writes so well for it.
I remember thinking that that was a rather unexpected recording for you to release. You hadn't delved into that far into 20th century repertoire.
Well, that 20th century repertoire is the kind of music, while it has a dissonant association, it is a singing piece. The way I was taught to play the piano and the way I studied, my mother was a pupil of Arthur Friedheim and was a pupil of Liszt. I was always taught to sing at the piano and to make a percussion instrument a lyric instrument. And that, the sonata by Samuel Barber, is a lyrical piece.
Is there any part of the pianistic repertoire that you haven't explored yet that you'd want to in the future?
I think that every pianist, if they have a career, at several points in their lifetime, we'll go back and re-look all the repertoire. That's one of the reasons why we at the competition in Fort Worth have set our age limit from 18 to 30. And then in the last two competitions, we have done away with any requirements other than a concerto for chamber orchestra size and then a regular concerto of any size or any composer. Those are the only requirements. We have no requirements because I think that by the time a person reaches the age of 18, they will, first of all, know whether they want to be a concert pianist. But then they will have surveyed the entire repertoire. And each person's career is like a fingerprint, as you well know, so that they will know exactly what period of music is part of their personality. Because if we do not see a performer's personality on the stage, how will we ever get to know him? If he's only doing something, he or she is only performing works that they think is, quote-unquote, the right thing to do, I think that is not fair to them. Because then they must show to the audience what is their personality and their favorite types of music.